Well, up next, chemist Steve Colburn joins Dr. Roger Lear as we talk about his analysis of two probable alien implants, an incredible story in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. First of all, let me introduce Steve Colburn, and then we'll have Dr. Roger Lear explain Steve's involvement with the project here. He's a chemist material scientist with 20 years of industrial experience, and he's currently working in the area of carbon nanotubes. Steve has recently done analysis on several apparent alien implants that Dr. Lear has removed from his patients and has uncovered startling findings as well. Now, Roger, tell me of Steve's involvement.
Well, Steve became involved around the time of the 14th surgery, and they became very interested in the work. And when the 15th was surgery was done, he had the ability to perform some of the very expensive analysis that we needed done. It was just a coincidence. And this is the way things happen, even in science, that his field of expertise was in nanotechnology. And most people will maybe remember the story about carbon nanotubes. It was only about maybe 10 years ago where science was arguing whether carbon nanotubes could even exist, more or less exist in nature. And then finally, they were constructed. And the carbon nanotube is very simply described as a structure of carbon in which the atoms are lined up in a particular form so that it adds tremendous strength. And there's been talk about, you probably heard it, about building a space elevator where you could launch a vehicle, but the tower would be so tall you wouldn't have to defeat the force of gravity, so which would be cost-saving advice for a conventional ship going to somewhere else in the solar system. The other thing that could be used for, Japan was interested in making clothing out of them, weaving them into fiber and cloth, and a woman could change the color of her dress or keep it keep the individual warm in the winter and cool in the summer. So they have tremendous applications. They're the strongest known thing known to man. And Steve just happened to be in that particular area of expertise. And when he looked with his equipment, this was the first time, at some of the implants that we had already done, he found these carbon nanostructures, plus many other different things, which we're going to hear about.
All right, let's bring Steve in right now. Steve, tell me about your relationship here with Roger and what you uncovered and what your theories and conclusions might be.
Well, I've gone over, George, it's great to be here, first of all. And
thank you.
I've gone over several of Roger's objects that he's removed previously, like you said, plus the I've analyzed extensively the last two objects from surgeries number 15 and 16, and we found some very startling things. We found nerve cells connected to the devices, as Roger's found in the past, and we found that the objects have a coating on them similar to a biological hard part like shell or bone, and that might be partly responsible for the lack of an immune response that we see to these objects in the body.
Mm-hmm.
These objects produce no immune response whatsoever, and that's extremely unusual. And
so you mean the body normally, when an object's in there like a sliver or something, the body attacks it, tries to get rid of it, right?
Exactly.
Okay. And in this case, it's not. It just kind of like welcomes it.
No, and it does not try to get rid of the object at all. Apparently are devices that are designed to not produce any sort of an immune response. And,
are you picking up, Steve, from these objects any kind of signals or any kind of field or anything like that?
Oh, absolutely. Like Roger said, we picked up radio signals from the devices, both the John Smith object from surgery number 15 and the Ron Noel object from surgery number 16 were giving off radio signals before removal. They were giving off different radio signals. Two of them from the John Smith implant turned out to be satellite and aeronautical communication frequencies. And both these objects also had strong magnetic fields of over 10 milligauss.
How were the objects detected?
How many objects have we detected?
Well, how do you find them?
You can pick them up on X-ray or with a stud finder also works, a small metal detector. And a Gauss meter can also pick them up because they almost always have magnetic fields.
Do the objects look organic or are they all artificial? What the heck are they?
Well, they seem to be a combination of both. The main bodies of the devices are metallic. They're mostly composed of iron, at least in all the objects that I've analyzed so far. The John Smith object was definitely meteoric iron. The trace element pattern matched exactly that of a class of nickel iron meteorites called hexahedrites. But the material was apparently not from our solar system because, like Bob pointed out, the isotopic ratios were quite skewed compared to what is found in on Earth or in our solar neighborhood.
Could we duplicate this implant today, Steve, if we gave it to a scientist?
I would have to say no to that. I think that even the Black Project military community would either not duplicate it or would have major problems even attempting to duplicate something like this. They are sophisticated nanotechnological devices with carbon nanotube electronics built right in, and they have a sophisticated organic coating, which is similar to a biological hard part, and do not produce any immune response to the body. And apparently nerve cells grow into the devices after they're implanted, and that's something that's beyond our technology as well.
Explain, if you would, for Steve, the carbon nanotubes, what exactly they are.
Well, carbon nanotubes are very tiny cylinders of carbon. They're similar to graphite. If you took a plane of graphite, a two-dimensional sheet of carbon atoms that's arranged in a hexagonal pattern like chicken wire, and you rolled it up into a tube, you'd have a carbon nanotube. There's various types of carbon nanotubes, single wall, double wall, multi-wall. You have nested tubes in the double wall and multi-wall. And these seem to be the single wall variety.
Are we using nanotubes now in any kind of application?
Yes, we are. The research is mostly in its infancy, but we've been trying to make ultra-strong metal matrix composites using carbon nanotubes. They're the world's strongest known material, plus they have very unique electronic and conductive properties.
How advanced would these nanotubes be that have been discovered in these folks compared to what we've got on this planet today?
Extremely advanced. These seem to be finished devices that are at least 100 years ahead of anything we can do at this point.
Minimum, I would guess.
Minimum, yes. That's being conservative.
Roger, when you looked at these objects, and you've been doing this for years, are you seeing a change, a technological change with these objects?
I would have to say no. I think the one thing that has changed is our abilities as we gain more knowledge and the sophistication of the equipment for which we are able to use to look at the objects. Now, why would anyone want to look at the carbon nanotubes 10 years ago when they said they couldn't exist? You know, and did we have anything? Did we have electron microscopes that would give us the necessary information, 10, 20 years ago? So as the devices advance, as our knowledge advance, you begin to look at things that you never looked at before. Now, there are other things in these devices that Steve hasn't mentioned yet. I want him to address the issue. We find that there are crystalline structures, and I think this is something for him to explain.
Go ahead.
There were structures in the John Smith device in particular, such as orthorhombic crystals of sodium chloride. Sodium chloride usually has cubic crystals. These were elongated cubic crystals.
What's the significance of that, Steve?
Well, we're not sure, but they definitely were too regular to have been formed there when the blood serum evaporated, and they appear to have been part of the device. We hypothesized that they were there to generate certain scalar radio frequencies similar to the old crystal sets. crystal radio sets.
Huh. How do you think these devices are put in a person?
Well, abductee reports indicate that they have the aliens have a device that has a long tube on it and a needle and a fiber optic going down the center, and that the device has a handle with a trigger, and the needle is inserted into the area of the body that they want to put the implant in, and a button is pushed, and the implant is then inserted through the needle and into the body, and they're activated by ultraviolet light, according to many abductee reports.
Roger, when producer Tom Danheiser and I witnessed your surgical procedure to remove an implant out of the physical face cheek of a person, that thing moved. Every time the surgeon tried to grab it with his tweezers, the object moved. You finally got it out. But is that unusual, the movement of these things when you try to get it?
Now I would have to say no, because even in the 15th and 16th cases that we did, if you were looking at the X-ray scanning device, which we call a C-arm, and a metallic instrument is put into the wound, the object that you're trying to isolate or clamp moves. And you know, surgical instruments are surgical steel, and they're not supposed to be interacting with any kind of a magnetic field. If so, you know, it could be extremely dangerous in the case of, you know, major surgery. So when you take a relatively inert stainless steel instrument and you insert it into a wound and it gets close to the object and the object moves out of the way, something other than what's usual is going on.
Steve, is it possible these objects are man-made?
I would have to say that it's maybe possible, but extremely unlikely, because of the fact that the objects have very skewed isotopic ratios, and the material does not seem to come from our solar system, plus the fact that it's highly doubtful that anybody on this planet has the technology to make such things. So it's a remote possibility, but I would say no.
Based on what you've analyzed, what do you think they are?
I think they're extremely sophisticated nanotechnological electronic devices that, like Bob said, are probably for the gathering and transmission of information. I think that they probably transmit sensory information, sight, what the subject is seeing and hearing, and probably physiological information and the sounds in the room. They may be microphones and...
And in terms of advanced, years ahead of us, you said 100, maybe more?
Yeah, I think 100 is a conservative estimate, maybe several hundred.
And that estimate is based on you guessing when we would have that technology, I assume,
correct.
Right? Correct. So, you know, it could be thousands of years ahead of us.
Yeah, it could be. It's very difficult to make these kind of technological predictions.
Probably a good time to interject a little sentence here that's in Dr. Kuntz's report, in which he said, then the object could have come from a stellar system which began to evolve approximately 100 million years in advance of our solar system.
And that's all possible, too. Very possible.
Yes, I think it's possible.
And if you look at the things that Michikaku has talked about with the classes of his classification of civilizations, this falls right in line with a very advanced civilization.
It sure did. Steve, when you did your analysis, after you were done, were you in shock?
Yeah, pretty much. I pretty much came to the same conclusion that Dr. Kuntz did, that my first thought seeing the isotopic analysis was that these objects must have come from someplace closer to the galactic core, where heavier isotopes are built up because of higher mass supernovas. And I don't know how many astronomers are in the audience, but in any case, it did seem like from the data that the material came from someplace else in the galaxy.
Roger, how long have these implants been in the individual? Since they were kids or adults? When do you think?
Well, we had one known case which we can answer that very clearly, and that was 46 years. Now, in the last case, a very interesting case as far as an abduction scenario is concerned, there were three young boys, 9 to 10 years of age, and lived in Tennessee on a camping trip. And they all had conscious memories of something happening one night. And under hypnosis, the surgical subject related a pretty good scenario, which was certainly typical of the abduction phenomena. But what I found interesting also, you know, in the time between, he's, I think, about 46 years of age now. So, you know, 10, that was about 36 years. So, but interestingly enough, to hear under hypnosis, to hear him talking about the light from the craft overhead coming down, how they began to float. You know, I'm an old buck, you know, and if I was a kid, you know, I would have a different attitude. Now, if someone or something lifted me off the ground, I'd be worrying about falling and breaking something. But to hear him explain this, you know, as a 9 or 10 year old boy, you know, they were thrilled. You know, oh boy, I'm having fun. We're having a ball. We're floating up off the ground. See, no fear whatsoever.
So, Roger, well, based on what you see, based on what you've heard, based on what you've looked at, if you were putting implants in another civilization from another planet, why would you be doing it?
Well, the one thing, as I said, that's a very difficult question to answer, but you have to look a bit in totality at the whole UFO subject. You know, number one, I don't think that's much of a stretch now. You know, what we know from governments and military sources and all the rest of the stuff, that there are visitors visiting here from somewhere else with advanced technology. I mean, that's a given. I have no question.
Yeah, evidence is overwhelming.
Yeah, and if you accept that, then you got to go to the next step. You know, there may be certainly remote-controlled vehicles, but, again, from all the witnesses all over the world, you know, this is not a U.S. phenomenon, it's a world phenomenon. The drivers of these things have been seen, and they've been seen in different forms and different garbs and guises and so on. So you have to have, you know, folks that are maneuvering these, manipulating these vehicles. And in order to get there from here, the old you know, story about they can't get here because of the distances of linear space.
People are thinking about it in our current the propulsion systems. Of course not, but that's not how they're using their way to get here.
Of course not. And as Bob alluded to, you know, that science is in a box, and we've got to think out of the box. So if they're coming here, they're doing abductions, they've got to be doing it for some reason. But then again, as I say, when you look at the effect, the possible effect of abductions, and you look at families and so on, I've been in 42 countries in 7 years. I've discussed this with parents and grandparents from literally all over the world. And if they talk about the kids, you know, I'm talking about measurable, quantitative things that growing children do. What age do they raise their head, stand up, simple age of speech, complex speech, all been accelerated, 16% to 86%.
Roger, we're going to keep you for phone calls when we come right back. Steve, thank you for your analysis. Fascinating. Phone calls with Dr. Roger Lear as we talk about alien implants. What the heck are they? That's next. Well, next hour we'll have open lines for you, but when we come back in just a moment, we'll take your phone calls with Dr. Roger Lear as we talk about alien implants on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with Dr. Roger Lear. We're going to take your phone calls for the rest of this half hour right here on Coast to Coast AM. Have any of these abductees, those with implants, gone through any kind of regressive hypnosis, Roger?
Yes, they have. We didn't do it with certainly all 16 cases. In the beginning, I was a little bit reticent in using regressive hypnosis at all, because we just didn't want the criticism of somebody saying, oh, you're planting ideas in these people's heads. But when we got farther into it, I thought that if the subject chose to undergo regressive hypnosis, we would at least supply him with an individual that had experience in the alien abduction phenomenon. And we've been using Yvonne Smith, who's been on the show before.
Okay, let's go to some of the calls. William in Riverside, California, first-time caller. You're up with us. Hi, William. Thanks for calling.
Hello, Mr. Norrie. You have an excellent show.
Thank you.
Mr. Roger Lear, I am William Stillings on Facebook.
Yeah, hi, Wayne.
I've contacted you before regarding I'm building your basically time-variant sonic incisor for cutting between cell walls for no blood on your incisions.
Yes, sir.
My question is, have you noticed that these the elements comprising the implants, have you noticed that a majority of them are oscillators? Now to give an idea, the odd elements in the periodic table, like 3, 7, 9, are oscillators, like copper is an oscillator, aluminum. And that a majority of these implants are odd number elements.
That's true, and I'm not an expert in electronics. Is Steve still on with us?
No, George? No, just you, Reg.
Okay, I don't really know as much about that as he does, but he has mentioned this also. I'm very much interested in your device, and if you could give me more information on it, I would certainly appreciate it.
And, of course, your website, Mr. Lear, is?
AlienScalpel.com.
Perfect. What's new with you, by the way, Roger? What have you been up to?
Well, we got a lot of stuff going on besides just the implant material. I just finished a program. We don't know where it's going to show yet. It's called The Watchers with Lynn Marzulli. I don't know if you know Lynn.
L.A., absolutely.
Yeah, and if people go to the website once more, alienscalpel.com, they can see the new date for the trip to Egypt, which is May the 3rd through the 15th of next year. And I just learned today that we're going to be taken to places where evidently no one has gone before.
Let's go to Lima, Ohio. John, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
Interesting lead into my question. As far as the elements that you're finding, I just wonder, thinking about Linda Moulton Howell, if they was to get one of the animal mutilations, if they would find some of these same elements at the incisions where they've discovered.
Mm-hmm.
And my second question, has any of the people that have had these implants, have they ever been through an MRI or had a discovery of that manner?
Oh, yes. First of all, they have to prove that there's an object in the body before I'll ever entertain the idea that they may even be a candidate for surgery. So most of them will have an X-ray. If we can't specifically look at the X-ray and determine its exact location or size of the object, then we'll order a CAT scan. If the object has a biological interest, we'll use an MRI. But you have to understand that MRIs are not really good for looking at the metallic foreign bodies because they visualize this bright object and a cross-section of a blood vessel with blood flowing through it will also look exactly the same. So MRIs are not the thing to scan with. If you know that something there or there's a lump or some reason for doing an MRI, then we do the MRIs.
What do you think is going on with this hybrid engineering?
Well, as David Jacobs has pointed out, it looks like there's a certain amount of them that are doing genetic engineering where they are doing some type of DNA splicing, perhaps with their own. But, our dear departed friend Zacharias said that Enki was the guy. He came, you know, he was an Anunnaki, and he is the one that's responsible for originally genetically engineering Homo sapien. So, as I said, you know, perhaps they've come back, and maybe the group that's doing the hybridization experiments is a secondary backup, because if the original plan, let's say, it doesn't work and we begin to annihilate each other and a piece of the planet, I don't think they want that to happen. Number one, they want to try and stop it, but if the planet has to be repopulated, then perhaps they need a different kind of organism. And you were looking for ideas for implants. I don't know if it's even really kosher to talk about logic, human logic, based on an advanced civilization. But, you know, let's look at a bear. A bear comes into your cave, George, has been breeded with another bear, and we want to know its sleeping habits. What do we do?
Yeah, that's true. We monitor. We watch. We genetically alter. We do everything.
And we look at the results remotely because they're implanted. Look at the complaints of John Glenn going into space. He said he had to swallow what? Implants.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Look what we do with pigeons. We put, you know, homing devices on them and things like that.
Sure, and we do it with sea animals. We, you know, look at the porpoises that have been used to detect mines and report back, you know, positions and look at the ships under the water. All remote devices, some of them far more advanced than certainly we know about.
Next up, we go to Phoenix. Sam's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Sam, go ahead.
Hey, very interesting show tonight.
Thank you.
My question is, have you considered re-implanting the devices in maybe yourself or one of your colleagues to see what kind of results you might get?
Well, yeah, that's been suggested many times before. I'm an old duff, so, you know, I suppose if I'm expendable, I could put one in me. But that really, I kind of go along against the grain of accepted science by doing that. I think if we did that, and perhaps if we're able to do enough of them, it might come to that. But we would probably use another form of laboratory animal other than a human.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Sam. Martha's in Idaho. It's your turn, Martha. Go ahead. Thank you.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have some concerns that I may have an implant or possibly more than one.
Okay, why?
Oh, well, several reasons, but the most, obvious one for me was one night I went to bed, woke up in the morning. I had, I had to describe it as a small mark on my leg that was most definitely not there the night before when I went to sleep. And it appeared, it wasn't an open wound, and it didn't even look like a fresh wound, but it looked more like a scar. But it was definitely not there when I went to bed.
Roger, what kind of advice here?
Well, number one, let me ask you this. You sound like you're a bit nervous. Just relax, because there's a lot of folks that have the same questions. Does this mark look like it sort of below the surface of the skin, like something has been removed?
Well, I do have some marks that look like scoop marks, now that you mention it. But this particular one is palpable. When I run my finger over it, it feels just very slightly raised.
Okay. Well, if you think you have an object, the thing to do is to get an X-ray taken, just a plain, simple, ordinary X-ray. If you're concerned about getting a prescription to have this done, or somebody might believe you, then I would suggest that you go to your local friendly chiropractor and tell them that you think you might have a foreign object in the body. He'd be happy to take an X-ray, and if there's any you know, I could volunteer to read it for you. If he looks at it and he sees something, fine, get me the x-ray. If he doesn't, I'd be happy to look at it also. You can get my contact off the website, alienscalpel.com.
Roger, when you take these implants out of people, and God knows how many there must be throughout this planet, what do you think happens to the person? I mean, do you think, you know, if you took, for example, let's say some detective had a homing device on a car or something like that, and it was taken off, he'd get upset. Do you think that's what's happening with these aliens who are implanting these people? You take the device out, do they come back and put it back in, or what?
Going by human logic, that should be the case, but that's not the case because, and again, I get asked this question very frequently, how come you? You know, how come I do it and nobody else is doing it? I researched the literature in depth before I ever even started doing this as a joke. But there was all sorts of stories that about surgeons and taking you know these objects out, strange objects, and they disappeared, turned to powder, dust, or they would be positive on an X-ray, and the surgeon would go to take it out, and there'd be nothing there. So, you know, I don't like to say this, but it's the only conclusion I can come to is for whatever the reason, I'm supposed to take them out, I guess. I don't know.
It's your mission.
Maybe that's my mission, exactly.
Bill is in West Hartford, Connecticut. Hey, Bill. Go ahead. Good morning.
Hi, George. Hi. Hi, Dr. Lear.
Hi.
Dr. Lear, I've been wanting to talk to you for years, for years. I'm an amateur astronomer and a very scientific-minded person. And yes, yes, I think there is something definitely to the UFO phenomenon. And I agree with you. I have an answer that's way out of the box. Way out of the box. Wait till you hear this as to what the implants are. They're not homing devices, I don't think. I got this idea. Wait till you hear this. I got this idea from the most recent Star Trek Next Generation movie, the last one made in 2003, where Data died when he took a small device, stuck to his uniform onto Jean-Luc Picard's uniform, and Jean-Luc Picard transported back to the Enterprise. What I'm trying to say is, could these implants be sort of beam me up Scotty devices, in the sense that if you think of these beings as 100,000 years or a million years ahead of us scientifically, could these small devices change the people's bodies into energy and immediately beam them to their planet, in the sense that if we were going to have a nuclear war and they wanted to get their specimens of 50,000 or 100,000 people through these devices, it would take beam their body into energy directly to their planet?
Well, it's an interesting scenario. But again, as George pointed out, if I was doing these people harm, and I would be the ruination of their life by taking them out, I think an advanced civilization would be talking to me and saying, hey, buddy, don't do this anymore. So, you know, of course, the other side of the coin is that, you know, your theory might be correct, and maybe these people aren't supposed to go where they're supposed to go. So a very interesting idea. Thank you for presenting that.
And maybe there's so many people who have implants, it doesn't matter if a few of them are taken, the implants are taken out by you. You see what I'm saying?
Well, maybe. It's all maybe.
Hey, Roger, and let me ask you, Bill, thank you. This is just an estimate, but worldwide, how many people out there do you think have implants?
Well, based on the Roper poll, which was about 2% of the American population, you multiply that worldwide, you get a pretty large figure of abductees. And if you look at the number of right now, I'm looking at the computer, I'm 1,782 emails behind. That's today. You know, so are these continuing? Are abductions continuing? The answer is yes. Yes, yes, yes. It's a worldwide phenomenon. It's going on. Large numbers of people involved. And it looks to me that perhaps a figure of maybe only 15% of the abductee population might have a genuine object in their body.
Okay, next up we go to David in Wichita, Kansas. Hey, David, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yes. Go ahead. Well, I was going to ask about these looking as homing devices or transmitters, but that's already been discussed. My question to you would be, have you done any demographic analysis of your of your population of people that have come to you with objects to see if they're targeting certain groups or anything like that? For example, you know, if it turned out to be a large amount of military personnel, just as an example, couldn't we be looking at a security risk? Or if these were like medical people or whatever?
That's an interesting question, and the answer is yes. We're looking for, always looking for commonality. Some people have pointed out a possible blood type likeness in abductees, but on a worldwide basis, it just doesn't hold water. However, on a worldwide basis, again, one of the things that we have found that does hold water is that the greatest percentage of abductees seem to be more right-brained. They're more creative people. And believe me, in the Southern California area, we have a tremendous, tremendous number of abductees. And certainly, I'm sure Bud Hopkins will also agree that in the New York area, there's a tremendous number of abductees, and probably most of them are also right-brained individuals.
Absolutely. Amy's in Chicago and east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Amy. Hi.
Hi, George. Hi, Dr. Lear.
Hi, Amy.
My question is, say you have a patient with what you think is an implant in them, and it's giving off various radio frequencies. Instead of taking it out, have you monitored what's being broadcast?
Well, we've tried to reproduce the wave that's coming out. But unfortunately, as Dr. Kuntz pointed out, this requires a lot of expensive equipment, and unfortunately, we just don't have it. So if we could record these wave emissions, we could learn a lot more and maybe even find out what language. But the best that we've been able to find out so far is that the wave frequencies are out of our electromagnetic spectrum. They're most probably scalar wave frequencies, and scalar waves travel much faster than the speed of light. So the information that's piggybacked on this wave is not discernible to us because we don't have the equipment.
Roger, great new information. I want to thank you for bringing it to us.
George, it was my pleasure, and I got real excited. I probably won't sleep now for the rest of the night.
All right, well, you keep listening to the rest of Coast to Coast. Dr. Roger Lear. When we come back, we've got open lines plus a quick update from Richard C. Hoagland on the delay of the space shuttle. We'll be right back.